Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Yeah.
Hi, Prasad. This is Sara Desai, Sara Nirmani.
Sorry, I couldn't get you. Could you repeat? There was some network. I'm sorry. Could you repeat?
Okay. First of all, is this the right time to talk?
Yeah. May I know what's it about?
Yeah, sure. So Prasad, this is Sara Virmani. I spoke to you on LinkedIn about next generation gynecological diagnostics.
Oh, that is correct. Yes.
Yeah. So I would not take much of your time, and I just wanted to speak to you about a couple of things on the same matter.
Sure.
Okay, great. So Prasad, foremost, I wanted to understand, we see there are so many molecular diagnostics available for gynecological cancers like ovarian, cervical, and uterine, right? So out of these, like ovarian, cervical, and uterine, which cancer do you think could be more promising in terms of products and services available? Like which cancer?
See, there are deaths by every cancer. Every cancer is equally dangerous, so you cannot just pinpoint one particular one. So definitely there is a lot more work need to be done on breast and ovarian side.
Right. So I was actually looking forward to understand in terms of adoption. Like I see ovarian cancer is the fifth most common cancer in women, right? And cervical cancer and uterine cancer are even more common than ovarian, but talking about it, ovarian has it's more fatal than the other two cancers. So
correct.
Yeah, I think fair enough. What you've told is very well received. Next, if you could help me understand on the current guidelines, like there are so many guidelines available by FDA and other regulatory organizations, how do these guidelines impact on the available molecular diagnostics like next generation sequencing or polymerase chain reaction for these particular cancers?
All of these do affect, because are you talking in terms of regulatory environment, like for regulatory approvals, or are you talking about guidelines for in clinical practice, how doctor would advise it? Can you make the differentiation?
Okay, so I would actually I would like to know on the both. I would like to take your understanding on the both. Like guidelines, are they unfavorable, and what potentially could be modified to increase the adoption? And also on the approval part, authorization part, is it limited? There is more scope on it?
Hey, guidelines part, when it comes to regulatory approval, it's always compared to pre-existing sometimes what is already out there in the market. Any regulatory's goal is to make sure that product is safe and effective.
Right.
So if the product is not safe for the patient, sometimes regulatory would compromise on ethics a little bit, but not on safety. So you don't want to have a faulty product on the shelf because it impacts people's patients' lives. It's not a software business at the end of the day. So guidelines do change over time because as you learn more and more. So even like guidelines on both the sides, like even on clinical sides, like let's say if I give an example of prostate cancer, mm-hmm. Let's say somebody would say, one clinician would say that if the PSA level is 4 and above, that person should go for a prostate biopsy. Another clinician would say it's not necessary. Even if it's 2.5 nanograms per ml, we should go for a biopsy. So these are. Over time, as you learn more, there are more literature published, even guidelines will change. I'm very certain in future, instead of screening, prostate cancer screening for 50 years and above and 4 nanograms per mil, in future it may be 40 years and above and 2.5 nanograms per mil. So guidelines will change over time as more and more data is available as time progresses. So that's the clinician side. In terms of FDA side or any ICH or any regulatory, like anything in terms of regulatory, it's always safety first. Efficacy at the same time, but the product has to be safe. So they will always compare it to already existing products in the market out there. That will be
Right.
their first foremost idea, how to get, how to review any product. On top of that, if these are sometimes these are completely new technologies. Some technologies are not well established. Like some technologies don't have enough. Like if you talk about molecular diagnostics per se, like you would have hundreds of assays, hundreds of tests, immunoassays or ELISA chemistry or chemiluminescence chemistry. But we won't have enough assays on sequencing side, NGS side, right? So it's comparatively newer. So for guidelines and then the way the
Right. Very well received, Prasad. Moving forward, like you're talking about molecular diagnostics, what is going to be your stand on the adoption of next generation sequencing in these three gynecological cancers? You see more adoption in coming future, or you see the other molecular diagnostics like polymerase chain reaction, ELISA, microarray to be taking the lead?
Sequencing techniques are completely new. There is an enormous amount of data
Right.
about each patient sample. When you talk about sequencing data versus when you talk about immunoassay data or a color chemistry data or a spectrometry data. So the things which you look at is very different. So we're going to need to use a lot of big data as well as a lot of data analysis, some AI help as well in terms of classifying all the data from which already happens, but it has to be done if even at another level, because then only it makes, because at the end of the day, when it's when you're talking about any genetical data or any molecular diagnostic data, it's going to be trying to find similar signatures across patients. So what that means essentially is you have to have tons of patient data available to work with anything, to make any sort of conclusion, to make any sort of inference out of it.
Right. And also, I think
So,
the
those technologies will always come forward, but yes, like as I said, some technologies started before, so they're going to have more products available using those technologies. But yes, there is a huge potential for you always get more and more information. We always want more information about patients' fluids, and if that helps in better decision making for clinician as well as for patient himself herself, it's advisable. It's well advisable. It's well received, and definitely there is a huge potential for like all the new techniques, including CRISPR, gene editing, genome engineering, so and it, I mean, there is. You cannot say that there is going to be competition between these, that there is no such thing. It's at the end of the day, it's just what patient needs. Whichever technology gets you that answer, that's all matters. I don't care if it's an immunoassay or if I'm a doctor, if I'm a patient. I don't care if it's an immunoassay technology or an NGS technology or or if it's like a gene, like CRISPR. Like I mean to say, if it, they don't care about what's the outcome, how it works. And definitely, sequencing, NGS, molecular diagnostics have going to give us a lot of wealth of data, which is going to be hugely helpful for the decision. So yes, it will be definitely leading the future, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your response. And I really agree with you, Prasad, on this, that the data generated from next generation sequencing or other next generation technology has to be, very easily interpreted. Right now, the data interpretation is difficult and complex. I think that has to be difficult on that. Lastly, Prasad, if you can help me understand, what do you think are the drivers for these molecular technologies? What do you think?
Actually, I also wanted to ask one more thing. I mean, yes, I saw, like, I have, could you give more info on your side, like, what are exactly doing? Because I just, we went over that LinkedIn message, but we haven't got a nice info from yourself, so if that's okay, if you don't mind, yeah.
I'm really sorry I started the conversation, and at that time I thought that I would not want to waste your time, so I didn't give my introduction, but here it goes. So I'm Sara Virmani. I am working as a senior
since I had communicated with you, I also didn't bother going too much into it, and I should have directly started talking and answering whatever you wanted.
I actually, it was all about not wasting your time, because the other day I called you, you were in meeting, so I thought today I will not waste your time at all. So here it goes. So it's like I'm working as a senior research analyst with BIS Research. Talking about my company, we are a
I didn't quite hear that. Sorry, please, could you repeat?
Okay, so I'm working with BIS Research. We are into writing reports on emerging topics across different verticals like healthcare, robotics, agriculture, technology. So we figure out all the emerging topics in particular aspects, and we write about the developments, the entire venue, holistic view of the market, of the, and we do a in-depth study on the same. Also, for the study, we speak to important key opinion leaders to understand their point of view on the topic, so that we are on the same page as ground reality. And then we research about it, and we move forward into it. So we are basically a market research company based out in, so we have our office in India. I'm working in Indian office, and we have our two more offices. One is in UK and another one is in US. So I'm really sorry to interrupt. Actually, your voice is breaking. I couldn't understand. Can you please repeat? Prasad, I cannot hear you. Can you hear me? Am I audible, Prasad? Hello?
Can you hear me?
I'm losing you. I'll give you a call again. I'll call you again, Prasad. Will that be okay?
Sure.